right, guys, welcome back to the Crypto Show with, of course, me, Chris, and my sidekick here, Danny. And on the line, I am very excited to say we have a very special guest, James Corbett of the Corbett Report. Now, James has been living and working in Japan since 2004. He started the Corbett Report website in 2007 as an outlet for independent critical analysis of politics, society, history, and economics. Since then, he has written, recorded, and edited over 1,000 hours of audio and video media for the website, including a weekly podcast and several regular online video series. He produces video reports also for GRTV and Sybil Edmonds' BoilingFrogsPost.com. He is also one half of New World Next Week with Media Monarchy's James Evan Pilato and a member of the Beard World Order. He is also an editorial writer for the International Forecaster, the weekly e-newsletter created by the late Bob Chapman.
Jesus Christ, does he ever sleep?
I know. I don't know how. He must have clones of himself working all throughout Japan trying to get all this done. James, welcome to the show. How are you?
Tired. But yeah, thank you so much for having me on. It's a pleasure to be here talking to you.
No, thank you so much for being on. And I can only imagine that with all you do, you're pretty exhausted. And I know you're getting ready to be at an Acapulco in Mexico here coming up in about a week. And I definitely want to get to that here in a second. But James, the first thing I got to ask you is, are you wearing your NSA, the only part of government that actually listens, jacket?
Actually, I'm not, but it is close to hand. I could put it on for this conversation if you want to give the readers or the listeners that mental image. But no, I do have such a jacket, and I should point out to people who are listening, I did an interview with the person who came up with that design and some other designs, some pretty amazing, awesome designs that I really love for sweatshirts and things like that. But of course, got hounded for potential copyright violation because apparently it's a violation to use the NSA's property, I suppose, in a t-shirt like that for a parody purpose. So, yeah, just another insight into the ways that we're told what we can or cannot do by these governmental quote-unquote authorities.
And that's so ridiculous. And not that I'm by any means a big fan of government or IP for that matter, but at least under the existing regime, you would think it would be public property that anyone could use for any purpose. But I guess we don't even have that freedom. Pretty ridiculous. And so was it Dan McCall? Is that correct?
That's right. Yes. Yes. Dan McCall. And I want to give his website, but I can't remember off the top of my head, but I'm looking it up because I am multitask worthy individual, libertymaniacs.com. And people can find my interview with him on my website. It's interview732@corbettreport.com.
Interview732@corbettreport.com. Well, thanks for giving him a little shout out because, yeah, I didn't have his website available either at the moment. And so real quick, since we're on the topic, I don't want to necessarily delve too much into it because we do want to get to Anarcho-Pulco and potentially a lot of other topics. Edward Snowden, kind of needs no introduction. I'm trying to even recall, I go to your site pretty religiously, but you put out so much content because you're such a workhorse that sometimes it gets a little confused in my head what you've talked about or what other people have talked about. Edward Snowden, I mean, at least on the surface, he seems to be this hero, Time Magazine Man of the Year, revealing to us the nefarious workings within the NSA to spy on the American people, a whistleblower. Do you take his story at face value, I'm curious? Or do you think, as some people have suggested, that he may be a sort of, I think what the CIA terms, limited hangout, a sort of controlled release of information?
I absolutely and positively do not take his story at face value for a number of reasons. And I think that the most generous interpretation I could possibly give is to say that Snowden is a dupe in this, perhaps a well-meaning would-be whistleblower who is being allowed to blow the whistle on certain activities for certain reasons and purposes. Again, that's the most generous interpretation, but I tend to take him more at face value at his word, the word that he is allowed to spread in the pages of Time Magazine or on NBC Nightly News or what have you, where he's featured regularly or has been over the past couple of years. And again, putting it into this war on whistleblower type narrative that's also, I think, very convenient for the current power establishment. But he, as he said, he's not just some lowly tech guy that just happened to be employed. He's a former, he's a spy. He was trained as a spy. He worked for the CIA. I mean, this is not just a regular Joe who's kind of stumbled into this information. This is someone who admittedly worked for the CIA and was a spy and had a very interesting background within training and special forces and things like this. So I think we have to take that story with a huge grain of salt for those reasons alone, if not all of the other inconsistencies and strange parts of the story generally. Although the question most people would have when they hear this who are coming from mainstream land is, well, what on earth purpose would the CIA or NSA or anyone have for doing this type of operation? Why would they want any of this information out there? And this gets back to a fundamental point that I've been making on the Corbett Report podcast since the very beginning. I think 2008, maybe, I had my first podcast on it. It's the idea of the panopticon, the idea that people act differently when they know that they are being watched, because they feel that they have to sort of act in the way that the authorities are expecting them to act. They want to act and look normal. It's that feeling that I'm sure everyone gets when they see a cop car drive by on the road. Even if you're not doing anything, you start to feel, oh, I hope I don't look like I'm doing something illegal. It's just that kind of reaction that we have. And to that extent, then it's very convenient, I think, for the NSA to let you know, hey, we control everything. We know everything you're doing. You better watch what you say. And unfortunately, I've had that type of correspondence from people for a long time, and especially since this NSA story broke. It's, oh, well, I can't talk about these types of things online because, you know, they'll watch. They know, or that kind of thing. And I think that is kind of the bigger scope of what's going on. But there's a lot of details to the Snowden story, and especially his mouthpiece, Greenwald and Poitras, and these characters who I think have their own very nefarious connections and parts to play in this story. And I certainly don't take it at face value.
Yeah, and that's the response I think I expected from you. I think we more or less agree on that. You know, like you said, even if we give Snowden himself the benefit of the doubt, and I have no personal reason to think otherwise, but there's no reason to think that the handling of it hasn't been very controlled. And one of the first things that made me kind of realize that is when he was put on Time Magazine's cover as Time Man of the Year. And when that sort of mainstream coverage hits, that's, to me, is a big red flag that something's not quite right about what's going on.
Well, yeah, I mean, look at a Gary Webb or a Danny Casolaro or these types of people that most people have probably heard little about. Gary Webb getting a little bit of publicity recently, but mostly covered up. His reporting exposing CIA drug running in the 1980s, for example, almost completely swept under the rug for a very long time, even though it was fully vindicated, and he ends up committing quote-unquote suicide, 2 shots to the head, that type of thing. Whereas Snowden, as you say, Time Magazine, Time Man of the Year, and getting, you know, feature interviews on mainstream news outlets. I mean, I think we have to look skeptically at things that we're being asked to focus on and look at.
You know, I think that's the key word right there, James, is skepticism. And the irony about skepticism is that the mainstream media and your average person purports to be skeptics, when really what they're skeptical of is skepticism itself. They tend to be quite unskeptical when it comes to whatever government or mainstream media or the sort of manufactured culture at large wants us to think. And it's quite an irony. And you're right, you know, like you mentioned Glenn Greenwald, and, you know, he's got connections to the former CEO of eBay, and there are connections there too, if I recall, to InQtel, the CIA venture fund company. And in the panopticon that you were discussing too, I think is really a very important point. And arguably, there are probably many reasons for why the Snowden link occurred at all and occurred the way it did. But I think that's the main point, is sort of two sides of the same coin. One, acclimating the public, in a sense, to, even if on a subconscious level, to the idea that they are being watched, and sort of accepting it, processing it on a very base level, then accepting it and moving on. And then also, like you said, being on their best behavior and sort of policing themselves and each other for fear of knowing that somebody's watching. And I even found myself doing this the other day. And I like to think that I'm very, enlightened and aware and well-researched in a lot of this stuff and thoughtful and reflective concerning it. But the other day I was leaving the bookstore where we actually do this radio program out of, and there was a cop who actually addressed me and asked me when the store closed. And it was clear he was kind of, I don't know what the word for it is, but basically trying to get a sense of me, size me up. And I talked to him for a good 10 minutes. I was completely nervous, but I was trying to be on my best behavior, and I noticed that afterward. And it was sort of a little bit of a minor wake-up call for me. Anyway, we'll get into more with James Corbett on the other side of the break here on The Crypto Show. All right, guys, welcome back to The Crypto Show. Me here and Danny, and our special guest, James Corbett of The Corbett Report. We are very delighted to have him. And James, we were just discussing Edward Snowden, and your take on that, I think, was well-received here at the show because I have pretty much an identical interpretation. But kind of switching gears here to something a little more timely, I believe you're taking your first trip to Mexico pretty soon, aren't you?
That is correct, yes, next week.
And that's for Anarcopulco in Acapulco on the West Coast, correct?
That's right, yes. So it's going to be in Acapulco, and the actual dates of the conference itself are February 27th to March 1st, but it actually starts a few days beforehand with some workshops, including a workshop I'm going to be involved with Luke Rutkowski of We Are Change and Dan Dix of Press for Truth about Change Media University, basically showing people some sort of how we do what we do, the alt media, and how you can be your own journalist and create your own media and get out there and do it. So I'm excited to be part of that and Anarcopulco generally.
I'm actually part of that as well. I'm volunteering for Luke Rutkowski to be one of the guys that's supposed to, you're supposed to try to get around.
Awesome.
Yeah. Oh, I forgot so, about that.
Yeah, I'm a volunteer for Luke.
And James, are you actually part of Change Media University itself, or are you just kind of doing workshops with them solely for Anarcopulco?
Yeah, it's just for Anarcopulco. I don't have any actual affiliation here. It's just I'm going to be there, and they asked me to be part of it, and I said, sure, I'd love to do it. And I'm excited mostly to help people answer any questions, because I don't really even know specifically what advice to give people, but I know that when I was starting out, I had all sorts of questions about all sorts of different things. So it's if I can be a resource for people who are going to be there, I'd definitely want to do that and help spread some of this info, because, again, it's always been my message that what I'm doing is not particularly special, and I think anyone who's listening to this could start doing something similar to it to help spread the information. And I think when we all start realizing that we're all nodes in this, we're not just passive receptacles, we're all nodes on a network helping to spread information and awareness. I think that's part of what I see to be the real revolution of consciousness that's taking place right now, and that I'm so excited and humbled to be a part of.
That's brilliant. You know, and I agree with that. It's kind of an internet of ideas on the internet, if you will, these nodes of information, as you put it. And I think you are actually pretty special, James, because at least for me, you've woken me up to a lot of things and done it in such a brilliant manner, and definitely been an inspiration. But you're right. It's anyone who has eyes to be awake to these things can do this. All it takes is action and dedication. And I think they were really smart, Luke Rutkowski at Change Media University, to have you on board for those workshops for Anarcopulco. And weren't you also going to be discussing, I thought I caught in one of your videos, how to free your tax cattle?
I certainly am. So last year I did a podcast episode that was quite well received, How to Herd Your Tax Cattle, where I pretended to be a member of the shadow government advising the president on how the country really works. And so this is going to be a follow-up to that podcast, and obviously it's going to, hopefully kind of shatter that paradigm and talk a little bit about how we can get out of that paradigm of psychological control, which is really the basis of the political control of the reality we see around us. It's so much to do with our psyche and how it's easy to play on our natural inclination to submit to authority in various ways. And I think people with the desire to achieve political power do play on that all the time in sometimes quite subtle ways. So that's what I was trying to sort of show and expose in that previous podcast episode. And so in this talk, I'm going to be talking about the flip side of that and how we can kind of reverse that trend and start taking back some of the authority that we have as individuals over our own lives. And I think that's the real solution to what I see as our real crisis, is that we are losing agency over our own lives. And the answer to that isn't going to come from some sort of centralized political power structure, or, you know, if only we could take control of the political power structure. I think the real solution is to devolve power as much as possible back down to the individual level, which is why I'm excited to be part of Anarcho Poco and to call myself a voluntarist and to identify with that strain of anarchist ideology, because again, I don't think that the answer is going to be created at the same level as the problems themselves were created.
Absolutely. Because the problems themselves are in large part from the top down. And I think the solution is in large part going to be created from the bottom up. And you're so correct that it's going to take individual action and awakening to do that. And you mentioned the word authority, and I think that's really important, because in reality, the government, the state, does not have legitimate authority, though they arrogate it to themselves. They give us the illusion that they have this authority. In reality, each individual has authority to do with their own lives what they want to do. And just to plug somebody real quick, Larkin Rose, I don't know if you're familiar with him. He's a voluntarist who wrote a book called The Most Dangerous Superstition, basically discussing this concept of authority and how it does not exist for governments, and why, just at a very basic level, governments have no right to exist or do anything that they do, and that, in fact, above and beyond that, what governments do are inherently immoral. And, I think it really is a big part of it is understanding that. I mean, it's so basic, but so key. And then there's a sort of more general consciousness raising that you can't help but run into, like, even if you're just a straight up, you know, anarchist, libertarian, Austrian school kind of person, you eventually realize that many people in, you know, this movement, if you want to call it that, also are awake to other ideas, including things such as, you know, that terrible little word, conspiracy theory, which is unfortunately pejorative in our culture. And in fact, as was recently sort of released through FOIA, a CIA document dating back to a couple years after the JFK assassination, it was released that the CIA was actually created that as a cultural phenomenon to be a negative thing. Anyway, well, speaking of which, I noticed in your interview, Jeff Berwick mentioned that a representative from Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth would be coming to Anarcho Poco. And so along this line, I notice a lot of libertarians and other open-minded individuals are very hostile and closed off to conspiracy theories, or let's just say other alternative ideas. Why do you think that is? Do you see it changing? And is it simply enough to be against the state to be a voluntarist? Or is it important to understand all these other things going on in order to really affect change?
Well, that's a good question, because I think it places the emphasis in the right way. Does it matter? Is it necessary? I would say not really. I don't really care why you're a voluntarist, as long as you actually hold those principles that the only types of legitimate interactions that we can have as adult human beings with other adult human beings is voluntary interaction. If you adhere to that principle and are a voluntarist in that way, then I don't really care what you think or believe in any respect, politically or otherwise, just as long as you adhere to that principle. So my answer would be, I don't really care what other people think about these types of issues, as long as they arrive at that conclusion, obviously. But I can say that I wouldn't have arrived at that conclusion, that voluntarism really is the sort of moral basis upon which we should structure any understanding of the world, if it wasn't for my quest, my journey through this knowledge of things like 9/11 Truth and other controversial subjects, certainly more controversial when I started the podcast than I think they are now. A lot of this has seeped into mainstream culture in a lot of different ways, and now things like the false flag and other types of terms have kind of entered the popular lexicon. More people are familiar with the existence of this type of operation and why it exists and things of that nature. So I think, to a certain extent, you know, in that regard, the alt media's job has not been done, but it's certainly accomplished some something over the years that I've been involved with this. But I think that then the next step is, well, what do we do about this? And again, that arrives at the same spot that I was talking about, where if these problems are, I mean, if you really understand that there has been active complicity in these types of spectacular terror events to create this war on terror narrative that's very convenient for would-be political rulers and things of that nature, well, the ultimate question is, well, what is the answer to this? And the answer, again, cannot be, well, we need some sort of big overarching governmental authority control grid in order to stop these bad people from getting into positions of power in that control grid. I mean, it's just inherently nonsensical. So I think the inevitable part is, I mean, most people will go through some sort of libertarian idea of, well, we need a smaller government and more controlled and that sort of thing. But when you come up with the logical contradictions in that are pointed out by people like Larkin Rose, quite ably, I should say, eventually you will come to the voluntarist perspective of this, or at least that's how I arrived at this. So that was my through gate into this political, not even political ideology, this ethical stance. And I don't really care how other people get to that, as long as they get there. I think that's the ultimate goal. So I understand a lot of people are afraid of this type of information because they still adhere to that social stigma that's attached to it. Oh, you can't be a conspiracy theorist. Oh, you're talking about conspiracy. You won't be taken seriously by, I don't know, Time Magazine, the New York Times. I don't know. Why would I care about their opinion? That's just the old gatekeepers of the old paradigm, and they're falling by the wayside. So again, I don't really mind that kind of ridicule. If people don't want to listen to it, that's completely their prerogative. But again, as long as our interactions are voluntary, that's all I care about at the end of the day.
Well said, James. You know, I couldn't agree with you more. And we'll be discussing more of that on the other side of the break with James Corbett of the Corbett Report. All right, guys, welcome back to the Crypto Show with our guest, James Corbett. And this is our final segment with James. And I wanted to touch on a topic here in just a second that I felt was very important and actually quite timely. Before I do that, I just wanted to kind of respond to what James said before the break, and I absolutely agree with him. I think voluntarism and anarchism and agorism, you know, more or less kind of three different words for the same thing with certain nuances different. It kind of doesn't matter how you come to that, but as long as you do, that's where not only the world will become better, but we can really find common ground. And you don't necessarily need to have come through it through conspiracy theory, but as James kind of mentioned, and this is true for me, without conspiracy theory, without people like Alex Jones, for instance, whom I've actually listened to on and off since probably 2000, I don't know if I would have been introduced to the ideas of liberty at all, or at least in quite so early in my life. And I really credit it with exposing me to that, because not only are conspiracy theories or just alternative ideas obviously akin to libertarianism because it itself is an alternative idea, but there's a lot of overlap in the adherence to that ideology. And as James said, it's not even so much a political ideology, it's an ethical and moral ideology. And in theory, politics or law, I should say, is supposed to be based on that, and of course it's not. But I do think, I will add that even though it really isn't relevant how you came to the ideas of liberty, I think for a lot of people, opening their eyes to false flags and government-sponsored quote-unquote terrorism and all that sort of stuff, if you can't convince them of the inherent beauty of the ideas of liberty, if you can't convince them of the economic theory and reasoning, I think showing them just how government everywhere always does evil, kind of no matter what, you know, especially at the top, that's an effective way to get them to understand that not only is the government bad, it's just not the solution for anything. It's the troublemaker. I did want to discuss, James, a recent video you put out, I don't know, within the past week or so. It's called How to Fake an Alien Invasion. And that's going to be kind of a controversial maybe title for some people. But I will say, when I saw that video, I was really impressed with it. And then a few days later, I noticed that an article on my Facebook feed that I read about John Podesta, soon to be former advisor to Barack Obama and former advisor to Bill Clinton, said in a Twitter tweet that one of his biggest regrets about leaving the White House is that there was no UFO disclosure. And when I saw that, I thought to myself, wait, was James's video in response to this? Because that's quite coincidental. And as it turns out, your video actually preceded that. And James, discuss a little bit what this video you put out is about and why it's important for us to maybe understand this agenda.
Well, actually, the even more interesting thing is I did mention John Podesta by name in that podcast episode.
Oh, that's
and then,
right.
As you say, a few days later, he's in the news. Oh, I wish I'd disclosed, you know, more about UFOs. It is interesting. And in fact, that's happened to me many times over the years with my podcast where I release something. And then the next week, there's a big story that relates to what I was talking about. So hopefully that means I'm on some sort of right track.
I think so.
Well, but it is, I mean, it's such a fascinating story because, again, the premise of this episode is not to even talk about the existence or lack thereof of aliens or UFOs or whatever. As I say in the episode, I'm sure that alien life exists somewhere in the universe. I would be shocked if it didn't. I have no idea if it's visiting Earth. I don't have any particular experience with that, so I have no reason for believing that it is. But whatever, it's not even talking about that. It's talking about the fact that there is a documentable and identifiable connection between some of these people who are identified as some of the biggest financial and political powers behind the scenes of the U.S. government and the UFO community, and this idea of staging a UFO type contact or invasion or whatever it may be as a way of implementing a further agenda, a type of extraterrestrial false flag, if you will, which I agree sounds ridiculous and would be ridiculous, but the connections are there. So in that episode, I talk about not only the Rockefeller backing of the researcher who was looking at the War of the Worlds phenomenon, the Orson Welles 1938 broadcast of War of the Worlds that caused people to panic, believing there to be an alien invasion taking place. But then moving forward in the 1990s, there was something called the Rockefeller Initiative launched by Lawrence Rockefeller and involving people like John Podesta and the Clintons and various people, Leon Panetta and Al Gore and others, who were all corresponding with each other, talking about this idea of UFO disclosure and things. And basically the premise is, well, what would the Rockefellers and others be interested in this for? Why would they be interested in this subject? And one obvious idea is the sort of something that's been promoted by Reagan and Clinton and lots of other people in political and financial and other types of offices, is wouldn't it be great if we had this outside threat to sort of unite the world under some sort of global system, global financial or global governmental system or what have you, which again sounds ridiculous. I agree, but it has been openly talked about many times, as I point out in that podcast, and the identifiable links are there between people like Podesta and people like Rockefeller writing each other about this idea. So I put all of those pieces together. And then, as you say, a few days later, the headlines are catching up with me, not only Podesta coming out with that, but also a BBC News article that came out, I think the day after or a couple days after I released the episode, scientists in US are urged to seek contact with aliens. So again, these stories just pile up, and I have no idea if it will ever amount to anything, but at least the idea is there and could potentially take place someday.
Absolutely. And, you know, after watching your video, it certainly wasn't the first time I had heard this idea or seen evidence for it. And as you mentioned in the video, certain bits of evidence out there, you know, you have to take with a grain of salt. Operation Bluebeam, Serge Monast, he was the only source for that sort of theory. So we can't necessarily take that at face value, although we can sort of tentatively add it to our sort of constellation of potential evidence for this agenda that's going on. But like you mentioned, if you look at other pieces of evidence, they're so tightly knit and direct. I mean, the fact that it's not simply some Rockefeller Foundation person happened to once give money to a UFO thing. Like you said, it's a Rockefeller initiative spearheaded by Lawrence Rockefeller himself doing this. And people within government like John Podesta, Leon Panetta, as you said, you know, there was even a recent video that circulated about a former Canadian defense minister, I forget his name, having a press conference.
Paul Hellyer.
That's right. Where he just in very no uncertain terms says that he is convinced from his experience that, you know, aliens exist. And again, I'm with you. I'm not by any means pushing the idea that aliens exist, I mean, they could, and that's a whole other can of worms, but it becomes pretty unmistakable that this agenda is there to convince us that they do, while kind of simultaneously denying it. And, you know, looking at the Rockefellers too, if you just examine what that family has done, not just having great wealth and political influence, you know, they've been senators and governors and congressmen, but they donated the land for the United Nations. They were spearheaded the construction of the World Trade Center. They've been involved in this alien objective. And anytime their fingerprints are on something, I think that's kind of a clue that something's going on there. And so, James, when I think about, like, for instance, the Orson Welles broadcast, which I think was 1938, if I recall, and, of course, Orson Welles was doing H.G. Wells' War of the Worlds, I think it's interesting that H.G. Wells himself was one of the earlier people in this century to use the term the New World Order. And, in fact, I think it might have been part of a title of his book. I'll have to actually double-check that.
So, no, it was New World Order, yeah.
Yeah, and so I'm wondering, do you think that the Orson Welles broadcast was simply a mistake and then they sort of took advantage of it? Or do you think that this agenda has actually been in the works since at least before that time?
Well, I certainly know of no evidence that Orson Welles was involved in any sort of operation here. It certainly did work out very well for him in terms of getting him national publicity that kind of launched his career, which he quickly scuttled with Citizen Kane, but that's another story. But I don't know to what extent that was a planned or staged or PR phenomenon. But having said that, I do talk about in the episode the fact that the Princeton Radio Institute or Princeton Radio Study, something along those lines, was founded and formed by the Rockefeller Foundation, was funded by the Rockefeller Foundation in the years prior to the broadcast of that War of the Worlds, and they were looking specifically for a research case to talk about in regards to mass media and how it can have that opportunity to sort of shape people's perceptions. And then this came along, and it was sort of the perfect ideal case study. So we know the infrastructure for this was kind of there, and they were looking for an example, and this presented itself. So whether or not Orson Welles is some sort of witting participant in some grand conspiracy, I don't know. But at any rate, we know that the Rockefellers were again directly involved in that. It wasn't just some random connection. It was an actual roommate of, I can't remember which Rockefeller, but one of the Rockefellers, an actual roommate of him, I believe Nelson, was the person who headed up this study that became the study. Hadley Cantrell wrote The Invasion from Mars, which was a study about this very phenomenon. In fact, I have a copy that I just ordered. It's an old used copy I just got off of Amazon. And in that preface, he writes, "I have often been asked whether I thought such a thing like this War of the Worlds broadcast could happen again. The questioners usually imply that we are now somehow too sophisticated to be taken in by anything so fanciful. Unfortunately, I've always had to reply that of course it could happen again today, and even on a much more extensive scale." So a very interesting piece of the historical record that I think we've forgotten to our detriment, because it really does tell us about the power that the media has for shaping our perception of the world and how that can be used by people who own that media, literally own it, to broadcast whatever message they want.
Absolutely. And, you know, you even get into a discussion and show video clips of the technology that would be alleged to be used in this sort of operation to promote this fake alien invasion. And, you know, it's certainly quite possible and plausible. James, we only have about 20 seconds left. Thank you so much for being on the show. We really appreciate it. We would love to have you back in the future. Danny will be with you at Anarcopulco. Is there anything you wanted to plug right before we get off air?
Not really, just CorbettReport.com, one-stop shop for all my stuff. Thank you so much for having me on.
Thank you so much, James. And again, that was CorbettReport.com. Guys, check it out. He's pretty awesome. And have fun, James, in Mexico.
Thank you.